The Citizen Tacoma podcast is sponsored by MoveToTacoma.com. Want to learn more about life in Tacoma? Visit MoveToTacoma.com.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Doug.
And we are the Citizen Tacoma podcast, empowering an informed electorate.
I thought we were informing an empowered electorate.
In the city of destiny.
Citizen Tacoma, my heart beats true blue. Citizen Tacoma, I'll always vote for you.
Hi, Doug.
Hi, Jenny.
Here we are on our second episode of the Citizen Tacoma podcast.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome.
Hello. Today, we talked to Parks Commissioner Eric Hanberg.
Oh, multifaceted, multi-talented.
He is. And he gave us some knowledge about the process of running for office.
There's a lot to it.
Right. From the filing all the way up until Election Day and all the steps in between.
So you'll know what to do when you run.
Yes, you.
That's
you,
the figurative you. That's a figurative you, not you, Jenny.
That's one of our goals of Citizen Tacoma, is to take away some of the mystery in the process and encourage people to get involved. So here we go. All right. Hello, Eric Hanberg. Welcome to Citizen Tacoma.
Thank you.
Happy to have you here. I was thinking that perhaps you're kind of like the Alec Baldwin of Tacoma podcasts. I think this is the 17th Tacoma podcast you've been on, much like his hosting of Saturday Night Live.
I want my jacket.
We need to work on those.
Yes.
We just got the logo sorted, okay. So give us some time. All right. So you are here today to tell us about your experiences as an elected official in Tacoma, Washington.
And specifically, I was interested in talking about what it's like to run for office to become an elected official, since we have so many people running this year.
Yes. And that is something that we want to educate people about here at Citizen Tacoma, because we want to make the process more accessible for everyone and encourage people to get involved.
Absolutely.
So, could you please start out, pretend somebody has not heard 17 podcasts with you on them already, and tell us who you are.
Sure.
And all that.
Okay. I've been on the Metro Parks Board since January of 2010, and I was actually appointed to the board. It's an elected position, but I was appointed to fill out Ryan Mello's seat. So Ryan Mello was appointed to the city council. And then when that vacancy happened, I went to the Metro Parks Board along with 11 other people, and I said, I'd like to apply. And they voted to put me on as well as another commissioner to fill another vacancy. So that's when I got started, and I then ran for election next year. I had a contested race. And then this year, I was up again for another term and do not have an opponent this year.
That's handy.
Yes.
And I've heard you speak before about the project you did where you visited all of the parks and wrote a blog about that. When did that happen? Was that before or?
Yeah, who knew that a New Year's resolution would like lead me down this path? So my dad and my wife and I in 2005 were like, we should visit every park in Tacoma, because we had heard about some parks that were like, where's that? We've never heard of that park. And so it was like this New Year's resolution. And I started blogging about it, and we took a photo by all of the signs of the parks. And it just kind of started snowballing. It turned out that that was the year that there was a capital bond. And so we had this brochure of, like, here are all the things that we should do in the parks that the park district had put out. And we were going around, and it's like, this park needs a new fence and a new swing set, and the tennis courts need to be redone. And we'd be standing there looking around, and we'd be like, yep, that's about right. Like, we could very clearly see the impact that this park bond would have. So that was the first time that I started, like, paying attention to the park district. I'm not even sure how well I knew that there was a park district before 2005. And it was that I created, like, a book with Apple iPhoto and gave it to
nice.
My dad as, like, the best Christmas present I've ever given was that book. But right before I went to interview with the park board, I took the book and I showed them the book, and I swear that's what that's what got me on the board.
Yeah, that was going to be kind of a follow-up question there, just that I know personally for myself, and other people perhaps too, sometimes might feel like, how am I qualified to be considered for a position like this? And so I wanted to ask you how you pushed through those feelings and whether or not there was more outside of your parks project that led you to that position.
A really interesting question. I think at the time I had experience as the executive director of City Club. And I'd been the managing director of the Grand. And so I'd had some leadership experience. But through those roles, I'd also worked with boards. Now, a nonprofit board is very different than like a board of, elected mm-hmm. commissioners. But I think it just gave me a window into like how it could operate and how it might work and how I would fill that role. But I mean, that's not like a huge barrier for qualifications. Like it's something that anyone can do. Anyone can get those kinds of experiences. And it's not even necessarily needed because you can learn some of that on the job. Like if there's something that you want to see happen with the school district or with the city or with parks, and there's a base of people who also agree with you and elect you into office, like then you can probably start pushing in that direction.
So you would say that experience working with boards and maybe some people's actual job experience can often be translated into experience that works well for a lot of local elected positions.
I think so. And I think, you know, this is where the question of like, what does being a, quote, politician mean? Mm-hmm. Like in many ways, technically speaking, I get an up or down vote and I'm like, that's really what I have at my disposal. I can vote for something or I can vote against it. But the politician part comes in like all of the work that happens before that. So telling staff my idea, and then a few months later telling staff the same idea, and like, are you still working on that? And what's going on with that? And talking to my fellow commissioners about it and talking to city council members about it. And at some point, by the time it gets to me, like it's ready for a vote of approval. So the politician part just means like talking to people and trying to show them what you're thinking and why this would be good for Tacoma or why it would be good for this neighborhood. And the vote part becomes like the least important part of it because most of the work is like just telling people, telling the citizens, telling the elected officials, telling the staff what you're thinking. And that's where a lot of the work is.
Yeah, so it sounds
and
like
listening,
a lot of,
I should say.
A lot of people's work experience might translate really easily into the politician part of the politics.
I could easily see that.
Yeah, I've often wondered, because I've thought, I would like to run for office someday, but I've wondered, what does that mean? And that's kind of one of the things we want to do on Citizen Tacoma, is talk to people about what exactly they do in their positions. Because it's more than just getting to have yard signs and make speeches. So
right. And in fact, the yard signs and the speeches are frequently the least important part of it. I think everyone can bring their own spin on the job. Like just even looking at the parks commissioners, we are all very different people. We have different focuses. We have different ways that we go about the job. Commissioner Andrea Smith, you know, is frequently seen at almost every public hearing that Metro Parks has. That's frequently during like my kids' bedtime, so I'm not there. So I'm serving in other ways. Mm-hmm. And so everyone kind of figures out what their thing is and where they can be effective and what fits with their strengths. It's an interesting job because there's the freedom to do it. Like the people have elected you and you have a term to serve, and how you go about that is going to depend on what you bring to it.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah. I think we have a little view into what parks commissioners do. The reason that we had you on today, though, was to talk a little bit about the process of how one goes about running for office and then what kind of the timeline is between filing and then what happens in the primaries and the timeline for voting and whatnot.
All that stuff.
So you mentioned that you were going to use Jim and Victoria, the two, Jim Merritt and Victoria Woodward's, the candidates for, two of the candidates for mayor, and kind of give us a background of what's been happening with them since they filed up till now, for example.
So I think that mayor is one of those races where like people file really early, which is why I mentioned that they've both filed in 2016.
Mm-hmm. We should also mention there's a third candidate now,
Evelyn
Lopez.
And there's, of course, a third candidate, Evelyn Lopez,
Tuned to Citizen Tacoma because we will be interviewing all three candidates later on in July.
So both of those two filed, and we're again talking about Jim and Victoria, or Merritt and Woodards, however we're going to refer to them, filed in 2016. And a job of a candidate before their, like, before the official filing week in May they're out there primarily like raising money, and they're out there trying to get endorsements. And in some ways, the earlier they can do it, the better, because then it's harder for a later candidate to get into the race. So that was probably what both of them were doing for the majority of the time, you know, the first 5 months of 2017, is fundraising and trying to get endorsements. And that could be individuals, that could be some of the unions, things like that.
How much money do you think someone has to raise to run for mayor?
For mayor, I would say, if I can remember back to the 2009 election, I feel like there was something like $100,000 spent, but I can't remember if that was total in the race or one side. But you're talking about big numbers.
I ran
in 2011 for the Parks Board, which is like the last race on the last page of the ballot. And I wrote it down because I thought it would be interesting. I raised $14,000. And I got 20,000 votes, and that's what won it. I mean, so it's like for these citywide races, it takes a lot because you have to mail everyone who's voting. You have to really do a lot of work to get your name out there and to say what you're trying to do. So the candidates who announce before filing week, that's what they're doing. Fundraising, trying to get endorsements.
This is kind of veering off topic, sort of.
But okay.
I was wondering how you push through your feelings of feeling icky about asking people for money.
It's interesting. I have done fundraising for nonprofits. And so you'd think, well, it should be easy. But it was tricky for me in my head to like get over, like, I'm not just fundraising for like, you know, the Grand Cinema. Mm-hmm. Like, it's for me.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting new wrinkle to it. Knowing the techniques of fundraising, I could transfer it, but there was that mental hurdle where it's like, I have, you know, could you give $200 for my campaign or something like that? And what I eventually told myself is that it's not really for me. Like, it is because the people who are giving this money want to see their park district go a certain way, and I will be, you know, like trying to do the best that I can to keep our parks clean, green, and safe when we are there. And I think I would do a better job than my opponent. And therefore, if you want that, you should support my candidacy. So it was like this idea in my head where like I was channeling it for someone else. Like I was the conduit, because otherwise it was just really hard for me to say like for me, like it wasn't for me, because otherwise it's just not who I am.
This seems like it might be a good time to say that producer Doug might be popping in now and then to add commentary.
It could happen.
They didn't want it to go too long into the podcast.
It just occurred to me when you were asking the question about how much money you had to raise that you really were prospecting for information about running for office yourself. That's just how it came off to me.
I mean, yeah, I've always thought someday I might want to run for office, but asking for money is definitely something that makes me feel like, ugh, like that doesn't sound fun.
You know what, where I really felt the benefit before I ran for office is that I had been in the job for like 15 months before, and I knew that I liked it, and I knew that I thought I was pretty good at it, and I knew that it was something that was like worth fighting for me. Mm-hmm. And if I hadn't had that experience and I was just like running cold, I think it would have been a lot harder for me to get to that point of like, this is something that I want. Because if you've never been in an elected office, how do you know that you really want it?
Or that you'll be good at it.
Or that you'll be good at it. So I think having been in that role really helped me know like, this is something that I really want to fight for. And I imagine that's why, you know, like when the last city council opening opened up, there were like 50 people who were trying to get that job. Because when you are in that role, you learn very quickly, you know, whether it's something that's good for you.
Okay. Thank you. That was a very thorough answer. So they've been looking for endorsements. They've been fundraising. Then they filed on May 16th.
So filing week is in May, and you have a week to announce your candidacy to get your name on the ballot. Very quickly after, a week later, your voter statement is due. And this is, again, where the people who file late and announce late are already a little bit like, oh, I need a photo, and oh, I need a, you know, I need like a voter statement.
State admission.
And if you just on a Friday saw a race that was open, and for Parks and School Board and Port, they're free to put your name in. Because there's no salary. For other offices, it's 1% of the salary is the filing fee. So especially for Parks, Port, and schools, it's very easy to just say, like, I want to do this. I'm interested. Yeah. And you put your name in. And then you start to realize, like, what that means. And that's usually going to mean you have that voter's statement due within a week. You need your photo within a week. And suddenly you start to get all of these emails from parties, unions, other organizations,
podcasts,
of course, who want to talk to you and want to find out, and maybe they have a questionnaire. And this is something that I very much remember from 6 years ago, is that after I ran for office, suddenly I was filling out all these questionnaires because all of these different people want to know, what do you think? And they want to do this so that they can ask you questions knowledgeably when they consider you for an endorsement. And so there suddenly is a lot of writing. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? What do you think about this? And then you, in most cases, then you sit in front of them and they ask you more questions. Hey, you wrote this. What did you mean? Or they ask further questions. So you can possibly, once you get to that filing week, the next phase is frequently more endorsement processes that happen. And that's going to take couple hours each time if you factor in the writing, maybe an initial interview, and then some sort of process for it. So this is one of those ways, again, where you see why the people who have either announced early or have some like professional help, like a campaign manager, are setting you up so that you have like your voter's pamphlet done and you have your photo done so that you can start immediately focusing on this next phase. So after the filing, especially if there's three people running for a race and there's a primary, they're continuing to try to get endorsements. They're really ramping up their fundraising because they've got an election coming up in just like less than 3 months, and that's the August primary. So it's a really very busy time for the people running right now. And in fact, I remember when I ran for office in 2011, they said, you should hope for a primary. Like, and me, I'm like, why would I want a primary? Yeah. It's like two elections instead of one. And the point was made, like, well, A, if you're going to lose, you may as well find out in August instead of November. Yeah. but the other part of it is, like, you want to know how you're doing. Like, I filed in May, and then I had election night in November, and I truly had no idea how I was doing in between. Like, in theory, it was going really well. Like, I had almost every endorsement in the race, and I was raising money, and it was, like, in theory, it was going really well. I could have been 100 votes behind, and I wouldn't have known. I could have been 5,000 votes up. I wouldn't have known. So you have this long project where you don't really know how you're doing. You think it's going well, but as we learned last November, sometimes that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And you discover, you know, oh, I really should have been working harder, or something like that. So I just had this stress all year, like, I need to be knocking on more doors. I need to be raising more money. I need to be doing more and more and more. It's like marketing in that way. There's always more marketing you could do.
Yeah.
There's always more campaigning you could do. And that's the hard part of it.
And during this time, would you say that's when a lot of people are asking you to form opinions and state your stance on a lot of things?
If you are jumping into the race like fresh, you will be asked questions you may not know the answer to. And that's one of the reasons why incumbents do well. There are many reasons why incumbents do well. But one of them is like they've been thinking about this for X years, and maybe you've only been thinking about it for a couple months.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part of it. But people are going to be asking you a lot of questions, whether that's individuals when you knock on their door asking for their vote, or whether that is, you know, some endorsement committee.
Okay, so then the primaries come along.
We get to August, and we have, I think, has been, well, we can cover it here on the show. There's a top two primary, so whoever the top two vote getters are, move forward to the general, regardless of party. Exactly, and that's statewide. So you discover whether you're moving forward or whether you are out. And then what starts to happen is at that point, the focus turns toward November. Frequently at that point, that's where some bigger endorsement people come in because now, like, they see who the two people are. Some people who endorse the third person are now going to be reshuffled. But that's, in my experience, when some of that, like, quote, outside money comes in. So the union maybe spends a little bit more for their preferred candidate. The environmental groups spend a little bit more for their preferred candidate. The chamber spends a little bit more for their preferred candidate. So you get this outsized effect of money at that point, which is why in some ways the primary is so crucial and yet so overlooked. Sharon Benson, who ran for county commissioner, I can't remember how many years ago, four years ago, something like that. She lost in the primary by like 23 votes.
Wow.
Like these are very low participation elections frequently. And so sometimes just a few votes is all it takes to separate. A more recent example would be City of Tacoma District 3 a couple years ago when Justin Layton was just a couple votes away from getting into the general. So you end up with these situations where a very small number of people, sometimes in the single digits or dozens, can separate who gets into the top two and who doesn't. So you have it's unfortunate that they're so low participation because they're so essential. But I would say for people who really want to get involved in politics and really make a difference, now to the primaries is a really important time to do it.
To get people on your side, but also to encourage them to participate in the primary election.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So then the primaries happen. And how long does it take once the voting occurs for there to be an answer and for people to move forward? Is that kind of an instantaneous thing or?
Man. So vote counting can take a few days at least. On the night of my election in November of 2011, I was ahead, but not by very much. And my campaign manager was like, oh, you got it. Because in general, younger people vote later, and later ballots, in theory, he thought would skew toward me. As the candidate, it's really hard to believe that. It wasn't until like Thursday night that I really did believe that I had won the election and it wasn't going to like snap back or away from me or something like that. If they're close, it could take a full week at least to like really know what happened.
It's a week to certify the results.
I can't remember what the exact time is, but I think for a primary, if there's an automatic recount when it's within a certain margin. But I mean, if there's like 1,000 votes out and you're down by 20, it could conceivably happen. So most of the time in a primary, it's going to be determined within a couple of days. But I can imagine in some very narrow situations, it might take a little bit longer. But most of the time, you know, with the primary with very quickly, because again, it's a lower participation, so it's quicker to count.
Right. So between primaries in general, you're gathering more endorsements, making more money.
At that point, you're really raising a lot of money. You're probably doing the panels, you know, you're doing City Club and you're doing all of these different forums. This is another point where people can really participate where they don't often think of. A lot of the neighborhood councils have like forums for candidates. And when I was running in 2011, I went to a forum one time that there were more candidates than citizens.
Wow. Like
that is an opportunity for one person who either has like a bone to pick or cares about a particular thing. They can get a lot of feedback from their elected officials and give a lot of feedback because no one else is there. I'm hoping that that is improving as people maybe are paying a little bit more attention.
Yeah.
But it's the truth. I mean, like frequently these things are not as well attended as they could be. And this is a great time to ask people questions that are important to you.
Yes, that's very helpful. I know that my neighborhood council meeting benefits whenever we have candidates come. So that's a good thing to keep in mind. So let's say that you win. Well, what happens right before the election?
Right before the election. So the ballots drop a couple weeks beforehand, 2 or 3 weeks beforehand. We're an all-mail ballot state, so they get mailed. And that is where a lot of candidates are spending their money, is trying to get mailings to show up around the same time that your ballot shows up. And they are paying thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to do that because, you know, that's where people, they're getting their vote, their voter statement, they're getting their ballot. And they also want to get the mail. The candidates want to get the mail in there at the same time. So that's where they're trying to sway them, and that's where a huge amount of the fundraising is going,
yeah.
is trying to pay for those mailers.
So if you're sending a postcard to everybody in your district, about how much does that cost, just out of curiosity?
A big glossy one with
right. 10 pictures on it and 10 bullet points.
Picture of the family.
A picture of the family, the dog for sure.
Having coffee with your constituents.
With all the concerned face.
All those wonderful photos that, yes. that you see there. Elected officials frequently start with what they would, in Tacoma, I should say, start with what they would call a 4-for-4 voter. So the county gives them a data file and says, these are the people who voted in all of the last four elections.
Mm-hmm.
In theory, that's a really good voter that you want their support because they're very likely to vote in this next election. And then they'll also give them, like, here are the 3-for-4s, and here are the 2-for-4s, and here are the 1-for-4s, and here are the people that are registered but have never voted. So basically, a candidate is going to look at their budget, and they're going to say, well, I definitely want to see if I can hit all the 4-for-4s and maybe the 3-for-4s, and then they just start going down the list depending on how much money they have.
That must be why I get so many.
So many, yes, because you are a true citizen of Tacoma.
I am.
So that is what they're thinking about, is budget versus how many is that going to take. A citywide mailing, I can't remember what we paid in 2011, but it was several thousand dollars.
Wow.
And that was, I think, just 3-for-4s and 4-for-4s. And that was almost everything that I paid for when I was trying to raise the money, was sending everything as much as I could mm-hmm. toward that mailing.
It's crazy how many of them are ending up in the recycler
right.
without even being looked at.
For them to look at for 20 seconds as yep. they take it to the recycling bin.
Yeah. I wonder if that's going to change, do you think, with the different ways people are getting their information these days?
Right. And that's the question, is like, you know, if you can target people on Facebook, is that going to be better than the mail?
Mm-hmm.
If you can robocall people, which is far cheaper.
Yeah.
So you have all of these different ways to reach people.
Phone calls are weird. All these causes and politicians that I'm passionate about, they're always trying to get you to call people. And, ugh, good Lord, like, who is answering their phone? Are these people, are these landlines typically that people are calling whenever it's the calling?
I think actually for politics, there's no restriction on the
okay.
phone. I could be wrong. I'm not a campaign manager. I don't know the ins and outs of this stuff. But
nobody wants to be called to talk about politics.
No, but you might listen to a 15-second message.
That's true.
So that's the thing. I don't know if there's, you know, what the most effective one is. In Tacoma, people spend a lot of money on mail.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that I would say to a candidate who maybe can't raise that much money, this is where, like, time just comes in. You know, are you willing to spend from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock
every
5 days
night.
A week for yeah. a few months, like knocking on doors in your district?
Yeah.
If you're willing to do that, you have a very, very good shot of getting elected. So if you don't have the money, that's the other way to do it.
Children and a full-time job, like, that's going to be difficult
for
you.
I bet small children are adorable
that's
on the doorstep.
True. That's true. Yes. Get the free labor where you can.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I always wonder, like, for example, John Ossoff in Georgia right,
right.
now. You know, there's all these, I get these emails saying, like, call your Ossoff, you know, to make these phone calls. And I just can't imagine how many phone calls these people are getting. If I'm calling you from Tacoma, like, people
right.
are calling you from all over the country for this one seat.
The scale between, like, what I'm talking about and what's happening at the congressional level, it is like astronomical differences.
Yeah.
In 2008, Mary and I were visiting her parents in St. Louis, and we were like, hey, we're actually in Missouri. We should, like, try to doorbell for Obama here, where it might make more of a difference than doing it in, like, Washington State. And so we got a list of, like, these are the people to talk to. These are people who are undecided, which I'm like, who's undecided between John McCain and Obama? Like, in theory, you should probably, like, to my mind, I just thought, I don't know how you can be undecided.
Yeah.
And almost every door that we knocked on, they were legitimately undecided. And I
wow.
don't know how the campaign knew that.
Did they answer it like, oh, you're the 10th person to knock on my
no,
door today?
No, they were, you know, what is... For many of them, the question was they liked Obama, but they were pro-life or something like that. And so they wanted to know certain positions, and then they took our information fairly gladly every time.
Well, you and Mary look like good, wholesome kids on the front porch, I'm
so
sure.
So we were, it was a fascinating experience to just see like this small taste of what like the national level politics mm-hmm. is like. The amount of money and party resources that with these special elections that they have, it just so dwarfs what any local person is going to be doing. It's night and day.
All right. So the general rolls around.
Yes. At this point, the ballots are out. And at this point, there's less and less that you can do. And in fact, you will frequently see your elected officials out at 6:30 in the morning on strategic street corners with their signs, sign waving. And I remember asking my campaign manager, I was like, is this really a very effective means of getting votes? And he's like, there's nothing else that you can be doing at 6:30 in the morning that will earn votes.
That's true.
I'm like, okay, I can see that. So there's a couple weeks there where people will go around the city choosing street corners, waving signs.
Asking their friends to join them.
and that gets you right up to election day at that point.
Wow. So then election day this year is November.
It's always the second Tuesday after
November.
The first Monday or it can't be the. Yeah.
OK.
Yeah.
And we should start hyping now that we're going to have some kind of election night party podcast.
That's right.
Situation.
Awesome.
Hopefully with all of the Move to Tacoma affiliated podcasts, we'll do some kind of live show.
Yeah, so frequently elected officials will have their own party. They might go to like a party, like political party.
So
yes. So they might go to one of those. And then ballots close, cut off at 8. Mm-hmm. And then usually within like 10 minutes, sometimes within like 2 minutes, but usually within like 10 or 15 minutes, there will be an initial count from the auditor where the website is updated. This is what the votes are for everything that we've gotten so far.
And that
is a very nerve-wracking period of time for a candidate.
Right, but it must be only the votes received as of the day before.
It is only what has come in those few weeks ahead of time. And then sometimes there will be like an like 2 hours later, they'll say, here's some more.
Yeah.
But in theory, anything postmarked by that date is still a valid ballot, which is why those next couple days can be can sway things. Generally speaking, if you like, this is what my campaign manager kept telling me, you will get a very similar number of votes in both sets. Like things aren't going to change dramatically between the people who voted early and the people who voted later, except maybe the people who voted later are a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore maybe a little bit more liberal based on current demographics. And so sometimes you can predict some swings, but you can't always.
There's probably some kind of formula that someone has devised.
I'm sure there is.
So what typically is the percentage in that initial flush of the total number of votes cast?
You know, I don't know. But it's a significant number. I would guess in mine it was at least half, if I remember correctly, back to 2011. And then they start adding more. And in my case, I did slowly start to pull away. I eventually it was 53% me, 47% Jerry Thorpe. And I feel like that night it was like 51-49. So like it can move by a couple percentage points even.
Jerry Thorpe, a teacher at my high school.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know what the actual like mechanism is? Is there a bunch of people in a room tearing open those envelopes, feeding them into a machine?
One of the ways that people volunteer is by volunteering at the auditors, and they do ballots and they do things like that. There are staff, obviously, that do this as well and oversee it. But the process is feeding things into a machine.
We'll need to put that in the show notes, how people can volunteer to tear open envelopes and feed in ballots.
And candidates, there's mechanisms for candidates and parties to be there as well to make sure that, like, everything's above board. So it's a very transparent process. And
nobody walks out with a full knapsack or anything.
Right. You might want to have, as you're thinking about Citizen Tacoma, you might want to have Julie Anderson or someone from the auditor's office on who can talk about that in more knowledgeable ways than I can.
It's a great idea, Eric.
Thank you.
I'm making a note of it.
Excellent.
Doug, do you have any further questions for our second guest here on Citizen Tacoma?
Do you have any other political aspirations as time goes
I wasn't going to ask you that.
I've asked him before, and I fear I know the answer.
But. I am right now very happy on the Metro Parks board. Could I see myself running for a higher office someday? Yes. I do not see it happening anytime soon. I remember hearing on the Nerd Farmer podcast, Zach saying, like, you frequently get these young politicians without kids, and then you get people who then have their kids, you know, like in high school or something like that, and then they run. And so there's this funny gap. And I definitely understand why there is that gap, because I think it would be hard for me now. In 2011, I had no kids, and now I have two kids who are 3 and 5. And I think it would be much harder for me to say, yes, I will spend most Monday nights away from you. And have, I mean, like, yeah. I can totally see why that happens. So I would guess anything else that I have in the future, I would want them to be a little bit older. Yeah.
Well, something that I find inspiring is that Nancy Pelosi did not run for office until her kids were in high school.
Wow.
And look where she reached.
Yeah. And look where she is. Yeah, that's really interesting. So, yeah, it's an incredibly, at the time, it feels very long.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that you can be doing, and sometimes this is where the professional help comes in. Is they're like, no, these are the important things. Only do these things. Where when I had started my race, I was like, I thought at the time I didn't need a campaign manager because it was a small parks board race. And by the end, I was like, Nick, I need help. Like, I'm just not gonna, because I just kept doing all of these things. Oh, I should do stickers. I should do this. I should do this. And that's a hard habit to break. And that's where someone who knows the ropes is really useful. I would say
like Dorian Waller, is that what he does then?
Dorian does that. Nick Van Putten is, and Case at Progressive Strategies Northwest is who were helpful to me. There are people who are outside of Tacoma who do it, who like Seattle firms who help local candidates or other people. There's a variety of them. And I would say if people are thinking about getting involved in the political process by running for office, at this point, they can't file in 2017. Mm-hmm. But this is a really good time to start thinking about whether they want to get involved in 2018.
Well, you have my endorsement for 2032, Eric.
2032. Yeah. Okay.
That's about right.
I have to figure out where I am in 2032.
For president? For,
yeah. What am I running for, Doug?
I don't know.
Producer
but
Doug.
The kids are in college.
I would assume so.
And they probably have they probably have full ride scholarships, I imagine, knowing your children. So.
So 2032. Okay.
2032.
Thanks. I'll count on that. See, can't start early. That is the lesson here.
Not early enough.
Never be too early. Well, thanks, Eric, for coming on today.
Thank you, Jenny.
I think this has been very informative, and people have a much clearer idea, I think, about the ins and outs. And I think just eliminating as much mystery into this process as possible is really, really helpful.
So I hope
so. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
The Citizen Tacoma podcast is sponsored by MoveToTacoma.com. Want to learn more about life in Tacoma? Visit MoveToTacoma.com.